Hello, and welcome to the DMV Business Show, a weekly show where we get to meet local business and community leaders in the DC, Maryland, and Virginia area. They get to impact their story and how they got there. You can expect to hear advice and learn about their journey and how they went from point A to point B. My name is Otto Sevilla, and I'm a commercial real estate advisor in the local DC, Maryland, and Northern Virginia area. I have been very fortunate to have worked with many amazing entrepreneurs and executives, from startup founders to international Fortune 500 companies. And one of the things I love about what I do is I get to form these great relationships with some interesting people. I get to know them and I learn about how it all started. And I love hearing a good business story. When I'm not working in commercial real estate, I just also happen to be the host of this show. So please enjoy and welcome to the DMV Business Show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the DMV Business Show. I'm your host, Otto Sevilla, and today I have a very special guest for you, Kiana. Kiana Jones is the founder and executive director of Congress Heights Arts and Culture Center. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you for having me, Otto. It's a pleasure. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How about yourself?
I'm pretty good. I can't complain. I'm grateful.
Thank you. Thank you again for coming on.
Absolutely.
Before we go into your personal story, Kiana, if you could give the audience just a general overview of the organization, what they do, who you are.
Yeah, absolutely. So Congress Heights Arts and Culture Center, affectionately known as the Center. We are an art gallery first and foremost. We promote and support Black and Brown artists. We also do programs and workshops, and then we're a triple threat as rental space for small businesses and for the community as well.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. A little bit of everything, right?
Yeah. I love that. And where are you folks located?
Yeah. We're right at 3200 MLK, which is in Ward 8 of DC. We're right up the street from Ballou High School and down the street from MLK Deli, a couple big landmarks over here.
Yeah. So I'm sure, you know, I don't know if this what you thought of when you were a child. Are you originally, by the way, from the DMV area?
Here, I am a native, born and raised in Southeast. Yes.
Ah, DC. Okay.
And so, yeah, well, you were mentioning it was never a thought or a dream of mine, to be very honest. I tell people all the time that the center kind of self-manifested based on who I was as a child and what I needed as a child. I kind of grew up as a weirdo because I never realized I was a creative. In Southeast, we don't have all the resources. You know, we're a little underprivileged over here and left behind a part of the city. So when I was growing up, it never had anything that nurtured the spirit of a creative. So I never realized, oh, you're just an artist. Until I left and had opportunities to go to school uptown and had those resources and different things. But it just always made me wonder, like, why don't we have this in Southeast? There was a lot of, I'm sure that we'll get into a lot that happened in between that. But yeah, the center is just a safe place for what we need over here. You know, there's a lot of things that we go through and we have to deal with on this side. So outside of it being, you know, like that necessary space where we can express ourselves, we're teaching people that the starving artist thing doesn't have to be real. You can become economically stable. So there's a lot of pieces that we, you know, that we add into the community.
I love that. So growing up in Southeast, you said you were creative. What were you into, the arts or music? Do you remember?
Yeah, I was just always... Well, I was always into fashion. So like trying to make my clothes or just like wearing different things. And then I always loved to draw. So I didn't really know that I was artistic, artistically inclined until, like I said, I got to a school where those resources were available and I was able to play around and stuff. But definitely was a complete art kid to the point they were using my art for like brochures at school or Christmas cards to send out and mailers and stuff like that. So yeah, wow. Definitely, very artistic.
That's nice. And all this art being used, was this back in elementary school or junior high school?
Yep, early as elementary school. And that's the sad part for me. Once I got to high school, you know, you have to do electives and art was considered an elective. I ended up doing Spanish and ROTC. So I ended up leaving art behind literally from high school all the way until I created the art gallery in 2015.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess growing up there in DC, in your free time, is it just art or were you into other things as well?
No, I definitely was like a little mini jock. I did a lot of sports. I did basketball. I ran track. I did gymnastics for about 5 years. I thought I was going to be the next Dominique Dawes for a while. But yeah, definitely active. And then my mom was really, influential in just how I approached art and how I saw art and loved art. She used to take me to all the museums. So definitely going to the museums and looking around and seeing everything and just getting really inspired.
I'm curious, is there any family there as far as artists or anything like that?
I'm the only artist in the family from what I know. My dad is a big art collector. Okay. He's also, you know, like my partner at the center. But for the most part, I'm pretty much it. Now that I think about it, my mom was pretty artistic. Like as I was growing up, helped me with my science projects and stuff like that. And she would like help draw, but she doesn't take it seriously, but she's pretty good actually.
So you said around high school, you said that's when you went uptown and I guess you transitioned from going to public schools in Southeast to Northwest.
Yep, absolutely. So I kind of bounced back and forth. I actually went to Montessori in Georgetown. Then I came back to Southeast and was at Beers Elementary, which is a DC public school. And my kids actually go there now, which isn't too far from my house in Ward 7. I stayed there for 2 years. First and second grade, and then I went back to Georgetown and went to Holy Trinity school and was there all the way until eighth grade, and then went to St. John's College High School after that. So pretty much stayed uptown once I came up there, but then it was also like always had to come back home, right? And then just trying to understand everything, because I would get made fun of for going uptown and the uniform that I wore, and people said that I talked a lot different. Which I learned to be, I just spoke educated, which was different at the time, right? But then also having to deal with my friends not being able to do sleepovers because their parents found out I lived in Southeast, right? And just trying to figure out, like, what is the problem here? Because I've always loved Southeast and I've always seen the beauty in it. So it always confused me once, you know, I heard the bad stuff from other people.
St. John's and Military Road, right?
Yes, on Military Road. Yes.
I have a good friend who graduated from there too.
Oh, nice. Yeah, pretty good school. I had a good time there. I definitely will say that.
Yeah, that's good. I'm sure it was different, I guess, living in Southeast, going to school, being exposed to different things there, right?
Yeah, it was really hard. It was really confusing. I had to take an hour and a half bus every day to go uptown before I started doing, you know, my mom started letting me get on the train. But yeah, I just was completely confused because, you know, even we're a food desert. Now we're starting, you know, with gentrification and development coming, there's different things that we're seeing now. But for the most part, we didn't have any restaurants. We didn't have to see any eateries. So I'm just riding, you know, this bus as a little girl, like looking at all these places and all these big buildings. And it's like, why don't, like, you literally come across the bridge and there's nothing. Why?
Yeah. How'd you end up going to St. John's, by the way?
Good question. So I applied to all these different schools. I applied to McNamara as well. I really wanted to go to School Without Walls and like got the whole process, which is pretty rigorous. And last minute, my mom was just like, you're not going there. You're going to St. John's. And really, this is a funny story. What really made me want to go to St. John's, there was this movie back in the day on Disney Channel called Cadet Kelly. And she was in ROTC and she was swinging the guns and everything. She was on drill team. And I was like, I want to do that. And that's literally why I think I decided on St. John's because I wanted to spin some guns.
And you did join JROTC.
Yeah, I did join ROTC. I was able to do like the cherry blossom parades. I did do the drill team unarmed and armed. So I did get to flip some guns every now and then. So it was a good time. And I just learned a lot. In ROTC, just about discipline, you know, like ironing my shirt, like some of the little things that you can miss out on. So it was a good experience. When I got to senior year, I was like, I want out, but it was definitely still a good experience. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I grew up in DC and I remember, I don't know how it is back, how it is now, but back then, if you were into the arts for high school, you either went, you mentioned School Without Walls or Duke.
Or Duke Ellington, exactly. Yeah.
Those were, I guess, your top two choices for public high school in DC.
Yeah. And I say, and like at that point, art was just more fun for me. I just never thought that it could be something that I'm doing now, right? Like full time. I never thought of that as something I could do. It just was something that was fun. So I really got into writing and poetry was really what I like spent a lot of my time doing. Off of seriousness, I ended up going to University of Maryland and getting my first degree in broadcast journalism. And so I was a journalist for years before I even like really got back into the artistry.
Oh, that's great. You went to here, the one in College Park?
Yep.
Oh, awesome.
Philip Merrill.
I didn't know you were a Terp alumni. Go Terps.
Yep. Go Terps. Absolutely.
Yeah. So you said you did broadcast journalism in here in Maryland?
Yep. Did broadcast journalism. End up leaving and went to ABC 7, Channel 7, Channel 8, worked there. I was pregnant with my daughter there. So ended up leaving, having her. And then I returned back into the journalism field, but through radio. I worked as a producer with CBS Radio, WNEW, which was the all news station. It has since been bought by Bloomberg, but was there working for about 4 years as a full-time producer and ended up getting 2 Edmore Awards. So yeah, I got a little stuff under my belt.
Wow, congrats.
Thank you. That's Rolo. I guess he wanted to be in the show.
Yeah, he needs his time in the spotlight too.
Right.
For those of us only listening, it's her dog, by the way.
Yes, my puppy Rolo. He's a cutie.
Yeah. Okay. So then after that, what happened?
So I worked and so I was at the radio station. This is kind of how I segued. Mm-hmm. And my daughter's father, well, I have 2 children now. My children's father, he's a full-time artist, went to school for art, like always knew he was going to do art, always did it. And I was working at the radio station, and it was a Navy Yard shooting that day, which is actually what I got one of my Edmore Awards from. And that night I end up dropping my daughter to her father because I was just had a long day. It was super crazy. In the middle of the night, that night, not in the middle of the night, Sean, which is my kid's father, he went to the store to get something, but he was on a skateboard. He ended up getting hit by a Yukon truck. And it just threw all of our lives into shambles. He survived, believe it or not, lost a couple of, insides, but survived, made a full recovery. But at that time I was in grad school, I was trying to do the radio thing. We were co-parenting and it just was a lot. So I ended up going part-time at the radio station and then working with my father, full-time. And that's how I kind of got to Southeast. So the space that we're in, the center, 3200 MLK, my father used to work there. And before that, my siblings grew up there. And so my father ended up renovating space across the street to make more office space, and the house became available. And Sean was looking for all these places where he could do a solo exhibition. And as most artists know, doing a solo exhibition is very hard and it's very rare unless you're like really popping. And so this house was open. I was like, this would be the perfect spot. We can make this an exhibition space. And my father's like, okay. And I was like, we should probably just do that long term because I don't want to keep working for you. Like, I want to do something different. It's just too stressful. So he was like, Kiana, we live in the hood. People are not, this is not going to work just being an art gallery. Like, you're not going to survive. Like, how are you going to keep the lights open on? And so I was like, well, we do programs and workshops. And then that way we can teach people art. Maybe we can, charge for some classes. But then at the same time, we're teaching the value and the power of art, right? And he's like, yeah, that's a little bit better, but what else? And I was like, okay, fine. We'll still do the rental and the property thing like you like, because that's his jam. And that's kind of how we started. We opened the doors in 2015 and just started rolling after that.
Wow, so 7 years ago.
7 years ago. I literally cannot believe it. I mean, COVID made 3 years go super fast, but yes, we've been open for 7 years. It's crazy.
What were you doing with your dad? You said you were working with him and his business?
Yeah. So my father, he's a developer, but he's also, he has properties all over from commercial to residential. And mm-hmm. So I was basically his property manager. Okay. And I'm an empath. I'm really energy sensitive. So it was like really bothered me that people were calling. It was like, I have a hole in my roof and it's raining. And it's just like, oh, I got to get back to you in a couple of days. I could not take it. So this was like the perfect segue for me to get out of that.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's good. So you renovate then the center, right? And then how does it look before you got in compared to now?
Yeah, so like I said, it was a complete residential house.
Okay.
Yeah, my siblings grew up there. Then my father ended up transforming it into his business space before he moved across the street. So it was like a regular house. Even when we opened in 2015, we stayed that way up until about 2017. But you come in, like literally looks like a regular house. But now we've renovated. 2017, my father got his hands in it because I guess he saw that I was doing a pretty good job and he was happy with how things were moving. And we like tripled the space. So now that we have a first floor that has two rooms, complete gallery downstairs, a full functioning kitchen. There's two offices on the first floor as well. Two big old bathrooms. We have a second floor that serves as our workshop space. We have about five offices on that floor for small business and art studio space. And then on the third floor is just all business space. There's a big conference center up there. I mean, conference area up there and about four more offices. And then we have an amazing rooftop, which is like, I think we're the only one that have a rooftop in Southeast, but it's the best. It's the cherry on top, I call it.
Yeah, that's where the parties happen.
That's where the party is happening. Yeah, we had yoga up there. We've done silent discos. We've done sipping paints. I mean, really, we use every part of the space that we can when we can.
I love that. Are you the only type of organization like this in Southeast?
So not the, well, we are, yes, we are one of a kind. There's nobody like us. Like I said, that three piece that we offer, especially space for the community to rent, and to be a house and the art gallery, but there are other art spaces that are not too far from us in Anacostia that we collaborate with every now and then. Okay. But for the most part, we are the only one like us in Connors Heights, yes.
So how do you start, you know, to get the word out there, especially that this is a new type of thing in the neighborhood and the community, right?
Yeah. It's one of the things, honestly, I still struggle with, right? Because we still have a lot of things that we have to prioritize over art, right? But then we've been really able to tap in to the artists in our community, right? So we started a brand called Southside Creative, which actually, sorry, listeners, you can't see it, but I'm wearing it. It says Southside Lives Matter. But the brand is called Southside Creative, which means a different kind of creative. And I think people just resonate with that. You know, Southeast is just a different part. I always think about, like, if you say Southeast of Detroit or Southside of Chicago, everybody, like, Southside is very specific, right? So I think just that, knowing that the place is for us and by us, for me being here, born and raised, I know what we like, I know what we don't like. So it just feels like family. I think the biggest part is just telling people, because we still look like a house on the outside. So people are kind of confused about what we are, just looking from the inside out. So we've got, you know, big signs and, you know, awnings that have our name on it. But I tell people all the time, because people are always like encouraging me to make it look more artsy outside, which I'll consider, maybe like we may paint the gates or something like that. But I really like the juxtaposition that happens, right? You're outside on this busy corridor. You got a house that's just like, what is happening in there? And then you go inside and you are just overwhelmed with beautiful art from all over the world. And it's just like, I had no idea. And then again, it's legacy space. So like the history, the energy, the vibes are really real. Like, and I decided not to, I made like a conscious choice not to go virtual during the pandemic, because I was like, you can't get this vibe virtual. You have to be in the space. You have to feel it. And so, yeah, it's getting the word out can be a little bit tricky. But I just show my face and I'm in the streets and I'm like, have you heard about the center? And they're like, what? Oh, that building on the corner across the street from the fire station. I'm like, yeah, that's me. Come see me. So okay. we're growing. I mean, like, when you think about business, right? 7 years, you're just now coming out of like your toddler stage. And so I think we're just really in a good spot now. We've built the momentum. We've planted the seed. So now it's like time to see everything bloom.
Yeah, that's true. But business, it's a long game for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So when people come in, all right, you know, I guess the marketing you're saying is more like grassroots. You're in the streets there, maybe handing out flyers or some material to get the word out in the community to come there, come take a look, come visit, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
What's there? Is it, you mentioned classes. So are these classes that people may sign up to learn about a specific type of art?
Yeah, for sure. So we're now just getting the ball rolling now that the pandemic has seemed to chill out a little bit. So we have yoga class. And so first of all, let me just preface that majority of the classes that we do, we offer, I say, for ages 5 until 105, because I honestly feel like art is for everybody, right? It's that universal language that you can tap in wherever you are in your life. So just wanted to say that. So yes, definitely have yoga classes. We've had stained glass class before, where you like literally are breaking up the glass and the instructor is teaching you how to like create your own piece. That was an incredible class. I should probably bring that back. We've had screen printing class for the kids and for the adults. Of course, we have a sip and paints. You can book those, and then we host them every now and then. What else have we had? We've had sewing classes. We've had chakra healing classes. So we do a lot of stuff about healing and emotional wellness and mental wellness. We literally do anything. And I mean, that's the other beauty of it. For the most part, I'm a one woman band. So if you call the phone, you're going to get me. If you email, the website is me, the Twitter, the Instagram, everything is me, right? And so in the beginning, I was really burning myself out the first couple of years of the center, like trying to create all this programming by myself and trying to host it. And then I realized there's so many other organizations that do amazing program and need space. And so that's kind of where we started to collaborate with people, right? So that we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We can just get with people and offer all these different things. So that's where we are now. And so outside of my mind, all these people that are doing things, I can't even tell you like the options and programs that we'll have coming up.
That's great. I'm glad you just mentioned this as far as other organization and sort of clicked for you there. So that means other businesses or other organizations are coming and just using your space.
Absolutely.
For one type of event type of thing?
Yep. I mean, a multitude of things. We have some tenants that come in and use our space for their monthly meetings, for example. We have meeting mm-hmm. space that people can come in. We have some co-working space if people want to come in just for a couple of hours and do things. People have their events. We've had birthday parties, bridal showers, visuals, memorials. I mean, literally anything that you can think about, you can come in and use the space for. Yeah. And then of course, like other organizations, we collaborate with them and offer actual programming, right? Where you can come in and do classes and stuff like that too.
Oh, I love that. Are you still also a sort of a one-man band doing everything yourself?
I am.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, if you're listening, we need volunteers, we need support. And like, you know, and so the thing about it is, most people always think it's nonprofit, like we can only like give them money, like write them a check. Uh-huh. We love in-kind services, people. Like we love that. So if you're an accountant that, you know, wants to get some service hours, come visit us. If you just want to clean up, you like, we literally will take anything. So please come see us. Like I'm so versed in saying we, but it's literally just me.
Yeah. Yeah. I use we a lot too. People are just like, hold on. Yes, I use.
Exactly. But it works, like for me, it works really well when I'm going for grants and everything, right? And I get to be there, especially when I get to like speak to them in person and I'm telling about all these wonderful things that we're doing. And then I stop and I have to tell them I lied a little bit. And they're like, what did you lie about? I was like, I said we this whole time. It's just me. And then they're like, oh yes, we have to give you money.
Oh, I love that. You know, I'm thinking for like high school students or college students, maybe they need some community service hours and they can learn a ton. Yeah.
Absolutely. We definitely do that. And we've collaborated with the city with the Marion Barry Youth Summer Program. Mm-hmm. And so we've gotten some staff that way through our teams over the summer. So we'll probably sign up for that again this summer.
That's great.
Yes.
What would you say drives and motivates you?
It's my community. Like I said, I'm born and raised here and I just know what we deserve. And so it's like now people are starting to see us because of the development and the gentrification and just like this beauty was always here. Right. And I just feel like I am that tangible example of like the beauty of Southeast and like the high caliber of what can come out of Southeast. We always hear so many negative things about Southeast and the things that are happening in here, but there's some really beautiful things. And I feel like I'm a perfect example. So that's Southside drives me. I love Southside.
What do you think was before that people were missing it and now they're coming to realize after all this time, all the beautifulness that's there?
I just think they were afraid, like just the things that they've heard. And then you literally, that bridge really does like cross us off away from everybody, right? So it's like crossing that bridge. I don't know if I want to go over that bridge. I don't know what's over there, right? It's like, as far as they, most people will come is Capitol Hill, forgetting that that is actually Southeast as well, right? But I think, and realistically, and just frankly, we were the last spot to take. The rest of DC was built up, and so they literally had no choice but to come over here. And then when they came over, it was like, whoa, this is what's here, right? Like, I think one, like, I live in the Hillcrest neighborhood in Ward 7. So I bounce between Ward 7 and Ward 8. And there's a lot of history here, right? Even in Ward 8, you have Congress Heights and Berry Farm that was a part of like war spaces that people don't know about. And then over here in Hillcrest, before President Cleveland was thought to live in Cleveland Park, or why Cleveland Park is what it is now, because he lived over there, they were gonna have him live in Hillcrest. And so it was good enough for him. So then, hey.
You know what though, it's so true. I remember growing up, you would hear the media about all of these things that are happening down there, Southeast or Southwest. And it was a lot of just negativity, and people would just be afraid about going down there. And they're like, I'm not going there, because all they would hear and see on the TV is all this stuff that's going on.
Yeah. And then it was an interesting space to be in as a producer, right? And like choosing and working for an all news radio station. And I'm trying to like find stories specifically, like to send my reporters out in the Southeast to create like a better light. And also like literally fighting against people not thinking it was worthy to talk about. Like really fighting, I'm like, this is my community. People care about this. And then like knowing who my listeners were at the time, they were me. Like they were Black women that were between the ages of 25 and 35. And I was like, I know what I want to hear about. Mm-hmm. And some of those things were happening in Southeast, and it was like really having to fight and advocate for Southeast. So it's just like, I guess that's my purpose. That is what I've been set here to do, is to fight for Southeast, baby.
I love that. Yeah, it's just about what you're not exposed to, because I even remember, you know, growing up in DC, my school, they would pull from all different wards and neighborhoods. So you would have kids from Northwest, Northeast, Southeast, Southwest. And it was such a diverse, you know, population of children that you almost had no choice making friends. Well, I guess I'm speaking for myself here, making friends with people. I remember just being friends with people from Southeast, Southwest, and whatever. And it was like nothing going to school with them. We just lived in a different neighborhood and community.
And I think that's what my mother, I think that was what her, she just really wanted me to have that diverse and cultured experience, right? And so I think that she spent so much time with me in terms of, and being very like, strategic in terms of the spaces that she put me in so that I could have this well-rounded mind.
You mentioned earlier when that incident happened with Sean, right?
Yes, Sean.
You were in the grad school and everything. Where were you studying in grad school?
So I ended up getting my master's in science management, with a specialization in public relations, which was actually really cool, because I didn't realize, I just wanted to get to the public relations side, but I had to go through science management to get it. And I never even realized what it was until I was in there. And it was perfect, because at that point I had started the center. And so science management was really teaching me about business management. And I was just like, oh, well, this is amazing. Okay. And I got to use my art gallery and my organization as a lot of the case study that I was doing in school. So it worked out really well.
Oh, that's great. You were learning in school. You could apply it firsthand day to day.
Exactly. It was a little stressful too, because I was just like, a lot of it showed me that I didn't know I had no idea what I was doing, right? It was just like, because when we go back to the story, it's just like, I had this vision. We spent probably 3 or 4 months like getting it, making it real and making the center real. And then we opened one weekend and it was just like, okay, you're a founder and executive director of a nonprofit, do your thing. Because my father has his own business, right? And so it was just like, okay. And so now that I think about it, it's like, wow, I've literally been doing this for 7 years, and probably 4 of them was just off the cuff. And so, yeah, I learned a lot there in school. One, about the things that I needed to clean up and just be more effective and efficient with. So it's definitely been a ride.
How was those first couple of years when you started it?
When I think about it now, like at that point, I was just on go mode, and I was pregnant with my son. I was in school. I completely burnt myself out. And you know, of course, there's duality in everything, right? Light, dark, everything, negative, positive. And so for this whole COVID situation, the pandemic, you know, there was a lot of negative things that came from that. A lot of people's families were affected. But for me, I was so grateful to have a moment to sit down, to shut down. Like, I could close the doors and like really get my mind together for a moment, because like I said, I was just heads down. I was raising kids. I was running the art gallery. I was trying to get my degree. And then all of a sudden I realized, like, I am literally killing myself for the most part. And so I think in the pandemic, I, one, got to tap back into myself, right? And so that's where I was able to get back into my full-time artistry, was really able to figure out what boundaries look like, right? What balance looks like, so that I didn't get back into that overdrive and that burnout stage. And so, yeah, those first years, when I look back on it, they were really, really hard, but they also taught me a lot, of like, again, about balance, where I'm just like, now there's burnout is not happening. Like, I know about like, okay, I will answer your call later. I will email you when I get back to it. I stretch my schedule out a little bit more. So it's just not, I don't have to put this tomorrow. Like, I'm more thoughtful about it, because I recognize, you know, you have to have a full cup in order to pour out. And there's no way that I can do that if I'm not filling myself up, right? And so, yeah, it's been a ride. I keep saying that, but it has been. Because now you're having me, like, think about it all. And now, you know, like, when you're in your business, you're just doing it.
Yeah, it's true. A lot of times in the business, we're in the business, and sometimes we take very few times to work on it and just observe from the top, looking down.
Yeah, give ourselves, like, some kudos, give ourselves some grace for how long, like how hard we're putting, because this entrepreneur life is not easy.
It is not easy. I'm glad though, COVID sounds like it helped you personally a lot to sort of take that break mentally and physically as well that was needed.
Yep. How did it? Go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
Oh yeah, I was just saying that it one of my main brands, sorry listeners, you can't see it either, but it's Face Yourself right there, which is really about accountability, right? Like, being accountable for yourself, but also what you're allowing to come into your space, and like really having a full reflection of self. And that's definitely what the pandemic for me, it like put myself in front of a mirror and was like, girl, you gotta get this together.
Well, what about the center? That the center during that time, that it closed?
Yeah, we completely shut down. Like I said, I didn't wanna fight with the fight of trying to make our vibe virtual. Like, I just didn't want to do that. I just didn't want to put extra stresses on myself, right? So there's other things that I focused on for the center, which was going for all the relief grants that was out. I mean, we wrote our tails off to get relief money. And there was a lot of grants that came out through Events DC. Events DC, we got one of the biggest grants that we've gotten to date, and was able to renovate our center while it was shut down. We got new floors and new hanging systems, new lights, like things that we really, really needed. New signage outside. And then, yeah, the COVID relief grants that came out, we were able to keep payroll running for some of our grant writers that we have. And for me, of course. And yeah, it was just, yeah, the center surprisingly came out of the pandemic way better than it went into it.
That's good. I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah, thank you.
What advice would you give someone if they came to you and said, oh my God, this is amazing. I want to do something similar like that in my community. What are some pointers?
Definitely a plan. Like, even if it's not an official like business plan, have a plan. I'm grateful that, you know, Spirit manifested this and it came, but to run off cuff is very hard to do, right? And then when you do that, you create a bunch of disorganization that you'll have to go back and clean back later. Like, literally yesterday I started organizing my files on my computer from 2015, right? So I have 7 years worth of files that I need to clean up and reorganize, because a lot of it is like, we've been doing all this work, but how do we show it, right? When we go to these grants and we've written all these grants, why are we rewriting things? Like, it needs to be a copy and paste. We need to be able to pull things out of a file. So definitely having a plan, because it just keeps you organized moving forward. definitely, if you want to be in community, you have to be in community, right? So you have to talk to community. You have to see what they want, see what they need, see what they don't like, see what they don't want. Because a lot of times people come into community, even if you are part of community and you're already there, you're just giving people what you think they want, right? You're not loving them how they want to be loved. So I think it's very important to really put yourself in the space, really talk to people, be engaged, listen thoughtfully, have good intentions with everything. And I think lastly, I would say just have grace with yourself, right? Take your time, pace yourself. It's not a rush, right? Yeah, just pace yourself and take your time and give yourself grace. Like, we are our biggest critics, but we are also doing the work, right? And so we have to be graceful with ourselves in that.
Speaking of being in the community, how was it when you first opened? How was the community? How did they take it?
It was interesting. So my father is kind of a legend in these parts, Mr. Finest Jones. And so for a while I was in his shadow, but I was also leveraging that shadow. Like, I'm Finest Jones's daughter and we opened an art gallery, right? So It was a lot about just like getting people used to seeing me, because I had, like, again, I was like, I'm born and raised here, but I wasn't necessarily like in the streets, like grassroots, like you were saying. So just being here and like all of a sudden showing up and saying, yeah, I got this. It's like, girl, who are you? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the other part about Southeast, is that because of what we talked about earlier, all that negative stuff that people hear and say, we're very defensive, right? And we're very protective, especially with the developments and gentrification, and we're seeing this displacement of our neighbors and everything. We are very protective of like who comes into our space. So I had to make people feel comfortable with me and remind them, like, I'm from here. Don't even worry about it. You don't have to be scared. I'm Southside too. So it took a little bit of that, but now, like, I'm introducing my father to people, right? And then some people are like, the center is coming before me now, which is super cool. Cause I'm like, yeah, I have an art gallery in Southeast. And they're like, that house on the corner? I'm like, yeah, that's me. So it's definitely, like I said, just having grace, and having the patience to see everything grow. You have to plant the seeds, you have to water it, you have to take time to cultivate. It's like a garden, right? It takes time. And so now we're just seeing the garden is blooming, and I'm excited.
That's good. But it's true though, you're seeing it, and now you're seeing it more as far as certain areas in DC being gentrified and being redeveloped. And what was happening, and you probably even now, most of the people were moving to PG, Prince George's County.
Ward 9, we call it.
And that was, you know, that was part of the reason too. You know, I did elementary and junior high school in DC, and then I did high school in Maryland. We moved to Prince George's County. That was just one of the many things. I wasn't doing so well in school and was going a different direction. I'm glad they pulled me out, and things changed immediately once that happened to me.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, I'm glad you turned it around too, Odo. Man.
are there any specific habits or traits you feel that you have that helped you, whether for you personally or for the organization?
I think, first of all, I don't give up too easily. Like, so I think just like my, what's the word for that? My diligence. I'm Greek. I also pledged. I'm a Delta Sigma Theta. So I think just going through that process also taught me a lot, just about endurance, because it takes a lot of endurance. Sometimes there's late, very, very late nights. There's very, very early mornings. Sometimes there's all nighters. So being able to push through that and having the mental to stick with me, like mind over matter, if you don't mind, it doesn't matter type situation. And so I think probably that's the biggest thing. And then again, just my love for Southeast, it's what keeps me going. Like, I can't stop. I just can't.
You can't stop. You won't stop.
I know, right? And the crazy part is, like, I do have a vision in the future to leave DC, because I feel like, even in my own artistry, art is very healing for me, right? And I feel like that is also just what we're doing in the community. And I think people are recognizing that in art itself, period. I had the honor of being one of the 7 artists to paint the Black Lives Matter mural in front of the White House. And I think that is what just sold me on this whole art thing. After 24 hours, that thing was replicated all over the world. And I mean, in countries that, you know, the same exact thing. And I'm like, this is the force of what art has. Like, this is the spread. This is the power. This is the healing and the change that it can have. Right. And so I really see myself being bigger than DC. Right. I always see myself coming home and working for Southeast. But I just feel like art has, I just have to move all over the world with the art. So it's interesting. Yeah, I definitely will never stop fighting for Southside, but I definitely recognize the fact that I won't always be here.
Where would you want to live besides DC?
I don't know yet, man. I don't know yet. For some weird reason, spirit keeps like whispering Texas in my ear. And so last year I checked it out and I actually really liked it, but their laws are kind of going crazy. So I'm not too sure about that one. And then I really don't know. I just kind of let spirit lead me and try to figure out what I would do. Florida's pretty cool too, especially the art scene down there. But push come to shove, like I would love to retire and go to Jamaica. Like I need to be out of the U.S. at some point. So that's like long-term. But yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. A lot of people are moving down to Texas and Florida.
I know, man. I don't know if it's going to be me though, but we'll see.
What would you say is your biggest challenge with your role today?
Right now, I think it's kind of the balance of my full-time artistry and like how much I can be involved in the center and just like keeping that balance because I still am a one-woman band, right? So just keeping the balance between both of them because I am a full-time artist now. Like I do tattoos, I do murals. I'm on canvas. I'm doing about a little bit of everything and got a nice size gigs that are happening in the city. So like balancing the two, but also it's sometimes like an easy balance because I end up just taking the center with me. So if I'm talking about myself, then I end up just talking about the center and then bringing other artists. So yeah, I think it's just really about the balance. And then now kicking up programming again, like trying to get our pace back up after the pandemic. So yeah, that.
You have such a rich history. Knowing what you know now, is there anything you would have done differently?
That's a good question. Yeah, I probably definitely would have at least gotten one more other like full-time staff to bounce things off with. I definitely would probably consider that for sure. And anything else, I don't know. I can't say that I would. I know like my advice was to have a plan. And so that may have been nice, but I also feel like the way I moved, just the spirit leading me was how it was supposed to happen. Right. Mm-hmm. So I don't question that, but yeah, I probably would have put somebody else on my team. Give me some help.
You mentioned your father, your partners a couple times. Is there any big mentors you've had throughout your life, whether him or anyone else? And if so, what did you learn from them?
Definitely my father, I would for sure say. He moved here from Mississippi in 63 and has always been an entrepreneur, connected with the city. I grew up with Marion Barry being my uncle. And so just being able to, and his love for the city, I don't know where that love came from. And like specifically Southeast, he talks about this story about how he came to DC and how he went to the top of the monument. And he just looked all over the city and was like, where am I gonna go? And he's like, looked at Northwest and was like, that's kind of too built up. And went to all the parts of the city and saw Southeast is underdeveloped and untouched. And he was like, that's where I'm going. And I mean, when he came, he just dug his feet in. And I think that's really where I get the love from. Like, again, growing up around Marion Barry, my parents met in the city council. So like just being in that whole space, I think that's really what gave me one, the love and the vigor for Southeast. And then seeing his entrepreneurial spirits and how he's like always, he got old country things. He says like, don't take a wooden nickel or, you know, weird stuff like that. But it was just telling me that it's like, you have to work, you have to take care of yourself and you can't put it on somebody else, right? And so I think that the entrepreneurial spirit definitely from him, because my mom is still telling me to this day, go get a job. And I'm just like, okay, I think I have one, but all right. Yeah. But then also I learned a lot from my mother too, just about patience, about pure intentions, about doing things for the good reason. My mother's just like that sweetest little soul. She's very conservative and, you know, in her corner. My dad's very loud and outspoken. So just having like both of them, I think. And then also I was just so different from them. And so I think also like the bickering that we had, we've like now just come into a calm space where we have like this good talking relationship and everything, because I think we just fought so much because I was so different and I just wanted to be me. I wanted to do the things that I wanted to do. And I really got that from my father too. And it was like, they wanted me to do this. And it was like, no. And I think that push also shaped a lot of who I am too, right? Other mentors.
Kiana, do you have any siblings, by the way?
I do have siblings. Okay. My father has actually, my mother, I lost a brother when I was 3. And then my father has 2 children, my oldest siblings, my sister and my brother. Yeah. Okay. So I'm the baby, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're the youngest one.
Yeah. And that's a crazy part. My father always wanted his children to work with him or for him. Uh-huh. My sister tried it. Mm-mm, that did not work well. And my brother's around every now and then. He does like some part-time work between me and my father. He kind of does his own thing. So I'm like the baby that really does it. And I'm just like, Dad, hello, do you see me? But my dad's, he's a good guy.
Do you have any family still down in Mississippi? You said that's where he came up here from?
Yeah, but actually all my family, we're pretty much the only one that are here in DC. Okay. All my family is either in North Carolina or Mississippi. I have a few, some family in Wisconsin, random. But yeah, most of us are still in the South.
Yeah, very, very different here, the D.C. area compared to the South.
Yeah. Yes, for sure. And I think that's part of it too, right? I'm the only one born and raised in Southeast, and they're like, you know, little baby country bumpkins, and they just think I'm just like the wildest thing that they've ever seen, but it's okay.
Coming to an end here soon, what does the future look like for you in the center? What is the next couple of years?
Yeah, so we are actually in a couple of different programs right now that's doing capacity building. My dream is to create artist housing. So that's what I'm working, like that's my next goal, is to find a space that we can house at least 4 to 6 artists and then funnel them into the art gallery, have a space where they can work, live and do their thing, and then funnel them into the art gallery for an exhibition or something. But that is definitely my dream. But other than that, we're just going to keep doing what we've been doing. I mean, we've been pretty successful. And like I said, excited to get back to programming and seeing what that looks like. More collaborations. We're doing more collaborations with the city and other nonprofits. We've got new spaces, plenty of new spaces that are building in our area around Congress Heights. The St. E's development is coming. So we're hoping to do a lot of activation there. So yeah, we got a lot of stuff coming. I'm excited. We got things in the works.
That's awesome. I just remembered a comment you mentioned earlier as far as having artists that aren't starting. And you always hear that sort of stereotype, that statement thrown out there. Is it easy, or how easy or difficult it is because being a successful artist and being able to sort of live on your own and still be able to do art full time?
Yeah, it's definitely tricky, especially living in this city. One, with the politics, and 2, with the housing crisis, like it's very hard. And so trying to balance the 2 and making sure that you have, you know, the money for the supplies, and then finding the right people that are going to buy your art. It's really tricky, but you just really got to believe in yourself, and you have to work. I mean, you have to get out there. You have to network. You have to talk to people. You need to get in shows. You need to visit other people's shows and just figure out how you can get in, because especially in DC, there are a lot of resources. And because the mayor is tapping into, you know, this creative economy, she's supporting it. There's grants like everywhere. The Arts and Humanities Commission is how we keep our doors open for the most part. Like literally, I have a grant that I'm applying for that's due on Friday. So it's definitely hard, but it is possible. It is definitely possible. Starving artists is a myth. Do not believe it. Even if you have to go outside on the streets and sell your art, right? If you have to pull out a table and do some own vending yourself, you can do it. You can do it.
It's so true. It's like running your business, and some people just see it more just the artistic side, and just focusing on the art. But there's the business side of things, like you mentioned. You got to promote yourself. You have to put yourself out there.
I call it entrepreneurship. It's like entrepreneurship, but entrepreneurship, you have to do it. And I mean, I think that's also where a lot of artists get lost in it, because we create off passion, right? And so a lot of us are just stuck in being a passionate artist rather than being a professional artist. And we have to figure out how we get our profits from our passions.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it just brought me memories when, you know, there's some musicians and, you know, there's artists out there, and they would have to go on streets and start selling their tapes back then when there were tapes.
Exactly.
Or this new track came out or whatever it is, because they weren't getting to play on the radio station. This is obviously before Spotify and all this stuff we have online, but you would just have to hit the streets and go sit out of the trunk of the car, wherever it is.
Exactly. And you see the street performers in New York all the time, in the train and everything. Get your quarters how you can, people. You can do it.
I love that. I love that. Okay. Where can people find out more information about you and the center?
Yeah, for sure. So my personal information, I am KamJ6 everywhere. That is spelled KamJay, the number 6. So that's .com. That's on Instagram. That's Twitter. And for the art gallery, we are Congress Heights Arts and Cultural Center. So it's our acronym, CHACC.org. And we are CHACC_DC on Instagram and Twitter. So just type in CHACC and you'll find us. Some people call us chalk. If you're listening and you're watching, please don't call us that. Call us the center. I hate chalk.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was a great conversation. You had engaging questions. You have a great vibe, great energy. Thank you so much.
The pleasure is all mine. Thank you. Take care.
All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
If you haven't done so already, please make sure to subscribe to the show and leave a review and comment and let me know what you think. Thank you, and I'll see you all very soon on the next episode.